I'm Nick, pronouns he, him. First of all, I am a bit overwhelmed by this. I thought when I planned this a month ago, I was thinking, well, maybe this could be a topic maybe challenging also for anarchist circles and for myself to discuss that with a small group of people here at the conference. And also, I'm from Bern, and I thought, oh, well, let's go to Saint Etienne, talk about that and with people I don't know and see whether that works. And so now I'm here with, 50, 60, 70 people. Yes, so that's the first disclaimer. Maybe my background, I am active in, or I was active in some anarchist groups in FU, Bern, and Bajule and stuff. I also did political science studies and went to Madrid, where I did some research about Solidaridad Obrera, an anarchist union in the subway of Madrid. And the spirituality, what we're going to be talking about today, is a more recent thing. It's maybe two and a half years ago that I started with this practice, and I have a regular practice now. And I realized that, well, there are quite some, there's potential for dialogue between what I call outer activism and inner activism. And this is why I thought I would want to discuss that with other people who call themselves anarchists or close to this idea. Yes. The relevance of this topic, I think it's, we are always in our society called to live our individual life. That's the most important thing, and to make our individual decisions and to compete with others. And also in some anarchist tendencies, we have the individual, which is taking the forefront, individual taking the lead over the collective, and nobody should tell me what I have to do, and I'm my own lord or master. Yes, and I realized that with, or for me personally, this interaction with the spirituality let me consider these things a bit differently. I am talking today about spirituality, knowing that I don't know hardly anything about it, and I want to say that also being a white cis man talking about Buddhist tradition, which is not for my culture, is probably already quite delicate, and not knowing a lot about it, it makes it more delicate. I'm also dealing with words from black and feminists and feminists of color. I have some books here, some that I got inspired from, and then have a look at them. But of course, this is just my experience that I'm telling, and we will have some discussion too. But it's just one way of seeing things, and of course not the only and not especially the right way. Yes, I would say that's, yeah, maybe I would have to define what I mean by secular spirituality first. Or before that, I will deal with four topics. Probably most of you have read the description. It's ego, death, love, and meditation. Four topics that are pretty key to spiritual practice, and at least some of them less so in anarchist or activist circles.
Can you repeat the four?
That's ego, death, love, and practice of meditation. So, but what does secular spirituality mean?
I have here some, I will have some quotes, but spirituality
for other people, I take this definition from the one philosopher that I have here a book of him, Thomas Metzinger. Spirituality is a practice dealing with issues that go beyond our rational or cognitive possibilities to to explain things. So things that we can't really put in words. Death is probably one of these things. We all know that at some point death will come, but we don't really know what death will mean. And the same with the ego, probably. We all have a sense of an ego. But what is our consciousness? What does consciousness mean? So it's even with these issues that can't be entirely put in words. And it tries still to make them
comprehensible. So what does secular mean? Why secular spirituality and not just spirituality? This is to distinguish spirituality from maybe more esoteric or religious traditions, which put, in my view, more a focus on belief. Belief is much more central than maybe science or trying to really understand. And so there's a distinction, or this distinction is about dogmatism. Secular spirituality would not be dogmatist. It would not believe. Dogmatism means that you believe in something or think it is true just because you were already believing it. And it's also against the fideism, it's called fideist tradition, where you think that beliefs are stronger than rational arguments. So even you would continue to believe things even if there's no rational argument for it, and even if there are many rational arguments against this belief. So that's why secular spirituality, in my view, is something where you have a reflexive position, always putting or questioning your position, your state of knowledge, and trying to undo your knowledge and to like grow towards a more comprehensive but also fuller picture of these issues somehow. But we can talk about this in the discussion. I would now like to start with a little think, pair, share work, where you can start to discuss these first two topics, the ego and death. And I have two questions. Maybe someone can take away the first sheet. It's underneath. So how would you describe the ego, and what comes to your mind when you think about death in general? So two questions. You get maybe 2-3 minutes to think on your own, and then we will pair and then share with the group. So the first question is, how would you describe the ego or yourself? And the second question, what comes to your mind when you think about death? So first, you think 2-3 minutes on your own. You can take notes if you have a piece of paper. And then I will say when we go to the pairing step.
Thank you.
I see people still taking notes, but I would say we go on to the second step, and you can choose a person to your left, to your right, on your front or back, and talk about this. I would say 2 minutes each. After 2 minutes, I will say to switch the person. 2 minutes per person.
Thank you.
So people, if you have things that came up in your discussions or things you would like to share about these questions with the entire group, this is now the opportunity. We have the microphone here, which is pretty short, the cable, but so you can use it or not if you want. Maybe the first question about the ego.
I think I can speak loud enough.
Yeah.
For me, the ego is the part that kind of like separates me from the rest of my surrounding. It's like what is entirely just within me and which is not in the connection with the rest of it. I'm just like being connected by other parts of structures. But I think this is what the ego is to me. It's like the part of myself that is just for myself and that looks out for me.
Thank you.
So, for me, the ego, there's that sense that it's what separates you from the others. The way I define it for myself is that it's what's left when everything else around you changes. Your circumstances, the cells in your body, when you strip the habits of your daily life, etc., and you move to completely new. To a completely different place, to completely different circumstances, exposed to new ideas. What survives to me is your ego. But to me, it's something that is constantly mutating, and it's porous. It's not like the Christian soul that exists outside of time and place, and maybe goes from body to body or body to celestial haven. It's something that is always evolving in contact with the things around you. So it's kind of like a sponge to what you have.
For me, ego is all that needs to be in equilibrium with our surrounding, with nature, our environment, and also with our society, like the people around us, between we are in connection. And the balance needs to include that every ego, every part, and every individual in the society needs freedom, but in order to get the freedom, there needs to be the freedom of the others. So our ego cannot get everything from us. And there is also a vortex of nature. And on the other side, we need some overlap to go into relationships, to be connected with each other. And I think that spirituality, if we make it practice in groups, can help that. And if we practice it alone, it can also help to reflect on this balance and to get this feeling of being interconnected with the others and with something that is higher than our ego in some kind of way. And examples where I made such mystic experiences are, for example, looking into the sky with stars and feeling that I'm so small, that there's everything so huge. Probably a lot of you can share this experience somehow. Or also, like, if I go to demonstrations and at some point I get this electric relief feeling because there's so many and it's so overwhelming, but in a very positive way. This is also for me a spiritual or mystic experience. And third, which is perhaps, I don't know if it would fall into a secular, but I'm Catholic, and if I go to the Mass and have this Holy Communion with this tiny little red thing,
not so fast, please.
Okay,
yes, obviously.
This is like, understand that it is like God. So God goes into my body and into the body of everyone else. And if you have a panentheistic understanding, so everything is holy and the holiness is higher than everything, this means that we get this with every food and every water or what we drink and so on and so on, and it's in everybody. So this means for my ego, two things.
I should try to treat as good as possible, to treat everybody as if there's something holy in the person, and I should behave myself and try to do my best to behave in a way as I am holy.
I felt really close to what you said, and that's not something I was able to write. And at the same time, I have this experience, maybe, and the anarchist surrounding to see a lot of people suffering of their ego that is wounded. So that made me say that ego is the energy that pushes you, it pushes yourself to feel valuable and important. And I want to talk about an experience that I made. So I have this old awful tattoo on my arm, and it says ego, and between two, like this, it's a L, and it was to say ego, Lego. So Lego, like the game where you pile small pieces that are hard and can like fit to each other and build a big thing in the end.
Thank you. So maybe one last.
Sorry for myself now.
About this first question, one last or two? Yeah.
But it's a bit different from like the other versions. It's more like a story, a concept of who you are that you tell yourself or that others tell yourself that then becomes like a lens through which you look at yourself. So as in the way you become born and your parents give you a name and that's your name and this is who you are, and then you make up a concept of what it means to be that, and that distorts your view towards yourself. Or in another way, you become a school kid, and then you make up a story for what a school kid, what it does it mean for you to become a school kid, and especially what does it mean to be a good school kid, because we all want to be good people. And then you tell yourself stories about yourself through this lens, and it distorts your view of who you actually are, and maybe it blends out certain things that do not really fit this perfect image. And then you go on and on, you become like an employee, worker, student, whatever. Some people, they might be like become nationalists, and then like I'm a German, and so this is what it means to me, and then they draw like the self-esteem of it, so there's like a lot of danger in it, depending on, because it can be a very exclusionary concept. And I want to also connect this back to anarchism in a way that where I see dangers is like when we tell ourselves stories about we are anarchists, and then we all want to be good anarchists, and so if I'm anarchist, I'm not sexist, I'm not racist, I'm like, I'm completely aware of all of this stuff, and then I distort maybe the view on myself through this lens of being an anarchist, and just black out all of the stuff, that, and maybe I still have issues to work on. Because of the image I want to create for myself, I might become less able to see that, and that's where I see like the role of the ego in anarchism.
Thank you. So many different, or I would say quite similar also visions, or complementing visions. Two or three people who would like to say something about death? What comes to your mind when you think about death?
Something that comes to mind is that I don't want to think about it. and yeah, so I think I'm realizing the anxiety that comes from just even having the thought. And what I associate it with is mostly the scarcity of life, or like the feeling of scarcity and the clock ticking in my head. That's what I think creates anxiety.
So anxiety, other
regeneration.
More about experience and concepts. So I come from a culture of the Caribbean islands, where actually death is it's pretty much there all the time. So for instance, there is a radio broadcast every day to say who was dead in the island, and it's like often that you will have a party actually at the place of the person who died, and the person, the dead person is there, and everyone gathers around, eats, discuss, meet and kind of hang out with the person and remember of the person a last time. The diaspora cannot always do that in Europe because it's more complicated to bring the person at home. But it's something that helps a lot to face death differently and be more comfortable with this. But then I have this discomfort of being in Europe and feel that it's completely hidden, and it doesn't help me to feel less anxious because I do feel the anxiety too. And especially when I was a kid, I really felt anxiety about my biological self, that I will just decay and disappear, and it was unbearable at the start. And so I don't know if it's something that people are connected to, but like, I don't know how spiritual was that, but it was. Yeah, I was like, I will just disappear, and nobody would be looking at me, and it was scaring me about what I was saying.
Thank you for this personal experience. Many last people, you two.
When I think about death, I'm not, like, I'm pretty calm. I feel like I've lived a lot, and I'm happy about my life, and I wouldn't mind if it stopped now. I also don't want to die, but I think this says a lot. Also, I can link that to my anarchism, where I try to not think I'm more important than anyone else. I try to change names all the time, so nobody remembers me as someone who started this and this and this and this. And because I know there's going to be so many more people who are going to like keep on fighting my struggles, and keep on like enjoying life. I don't feel like I need to be there longer. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
I love to think about death in a powerful way. I love to think about death as something powerful that values life. It's because it's gonna stop that it's meaningful to living in the now. And thinking about that, maybe tomorrow this person I'm talking to may be dead, is like, oh, it makes this moment so precious, because I try to grab the idea that maybe it's the last time, and so it's making it worth it. And warfare that just being like, okay, next time, maybe. No, maybe it's the last time.
Thank you. So, last person there.
I just had a thought about death that popped up and related to spirituality. So in a spiritual sense, I feel like we're all connected to each other and our struggles are all connected, and I'm fighting for some kind of greater good. I'm part of a network of some sort, and I know that especially countries in the Global South, there's so many people that give their life for a cause, or they die in the fight, but even though I kind of know I'm connected to everything and the struggle will continue without me, I feel like personally, I feel a very strong resistance to die for a cause. And sometimes I wish I could have that willingness or find that willingness, because I feel like it comes from a very privileged position to not have to do that. That's my two cents.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very last.
I'm sorry, it's just like, I feel like what comes to your mind when you think about death, I haven't heard of what comes after death. We are in a spirituality group, so I feel like, does no one think maybe there's something after, once we disappear, poof, it's done. Like, everything is left on Earth, and there's nothing further. And there's so many religions where there's something, you know, you're going to die because there's something afterwards better. And for us, is it just here? Are we all no gods, no masters? Or is there a bit more room for something like no masters in paradise or something like that?
opening up discussion, but I have also planned to say a few things about it. Maybe we will have time for discussion after this. I think it's an important question, and that's probably the main reason why.
Thank you very much.
That's also the question why, or the reason why I put death, because there's the question about death. What does it mean? Does it mean an end, or does it mean a beginning? And so, for many people, this is a very question with a lot of ears, with a lot of hope, maybe. I would also like to share my thoughts, which are hopefully not much worse than yours, and maybe probably not much better either. But based on the readings I did and practiced, and so the self, the ego, it's a very interesting phenomenon, I would say, because we all feel it. We all have it. It's here now. I feel I'm here. But then when you have this question of what does the ego mean? So we describe it, it's always there. It's this thing that stays stable when everything else changes. But what the ego actually is, it's very hard then to define. And from a spiritual or Buddhist perspective, it's also something that is not always there. And when you look at science, you see that the ego actually arises at the age of 2 or 3. So it's not always, hasn't always been there in your, not even in your body. When you sleep, it's most of the time your ego is absent. So it's not there either. And then the latest, when you die, then the question comes, what happens with your ego? And probably like the more scientific part would say that the ego is just a result of a chemical interaction in your brain, that this is what then creates your sense of ego. And in my very personal view, this is also because we have then this attachment to this ego, that's why we have started to create such concepts like soul, because we have a hard time dealing with the possibility that this thing that we identify with, which is the core of our life, of the universe, that this might come to an end at some point. And so we have the soul that will survive, that will override, outlive us. And then the Buddhist tradition, there's this notion of the three characteristics of every existence. So this impermanence in every phenomenon, psychological or physical phenomenon, there's impermanence. So that has also been said, it's fluid, it's constantly changing. The person that you are, the ego, somehow you have the impression it stays, but the person you have been yesterday is not the person you are today. You are constantly changing. So this ego is not a stable thing either. That's one, like, impermanence. The second characteristic is that it's unsatisfactory. This maybe doesn't relate so much to the ego, but that every phenomenon or no phenomenon will provide lasting satisfaction, because every phenomenon is impermanent. It arises and it fades away. Also, there's no phenomenon that will give you peace or satisfaction eternally. And then the third characteristic is the non-self, that there's no true or no stable essence in any phenomenon. And so this non-essence would also apply to the ego. There's not a stable core, even though we wish and we hope that there is something like that sable with us, then this is myself. The Buddhist traditions would say, or that's why they speak of non-self, that this might not be the case. And I think this vision on our ego is an interesting one, because it's decentering our view away from ourselves, I would say, especially white men who are socialized to being in competition and imposing dominance, think their ego is the most important, or our egos are the most important ones. Seeing that maybe this ego actually, when you look closer, it crumbles away, makes it easier to connect with the community around you, and to see that actually there's no reason why you should have any priority over another person, and that maybe what actually matters most is not your personal self, because it doesn't exist as such, or it's an experience, but that's what it is. Your self is an experience, it's not a stable entity somewhere out there. Yes, and this also so opens up in Buddhism. There's a strong notion of interdependence, dependent arising. So every being, no being exists on its own, in and of itself. Every being comes into being through other actions. So the dependent arising that they talk about, and this then, when you see that actually you have been born through other people, you survive thanks to other people, and every all happiness you enjoy is most likely also through other people, you get the sense of actually maybe what matters more than myself is this interdependence, this community that surrounds you. Yes, so that's also maybe then again related to our conflicting with neoliberalist or capitalist thinking, where every individual should come first and should compete with all the others. And that from a more spiritual perspective, we would actually see that maybe everybody would gain. It's nothing to maybe anarchist people. Everybody would gain through more collaboration and solidarity. Then one notion that I also wanted to talk about is this notion that is karma. So maybe for some people there is that connotation, and there are many different definitions of karma. This relates more to the question of death, but also to the ego. So karma, in many use also Buddhist perspectives, it's connected to rebirth. So what you do will affect who you will be in your next life. But actually karma, the definition or the translation is action or doing. So it's the action, focus on the action. And in the narrow definition of karma, which is also used by some Buddhist traditions, it's just the consequences of your actions. Consequences of your, they speak more of intentional actions. But then, and thinking about interdependence, ego, and karma, when you see that your ego probably won't last, won't survive you, thinking about karma helps you see that maybe what outlives you, it's not your ego, but the consequences of your actions, because what you did, the consequences of what you did, they will last, they will outlast you. And I think this is a very powerful concept if you use it that way, because it comes with a lot of responsibility. What you do now, what you do every second, in your close interaction with your friends, with your whatever, family, and larger groups, this is what will survive after you die. And so this is also, for me, I joined
some of you have said that, like anxiety with death. This was also the driving force behind my quest for answers. I wanted to know what that meant and what will happen, and like knowing that, yes, well, maybe that means that I will no longer exist as a person, but knowing that what I do now, this is what will last, gives a meaning to what you do. An important thing about karma is also it's not just consequences that you have on other people, it's also the consequences that of these actions on your own self. So if you have well-intentioned actions, you will cultivate positive qualities within yourself. If you have ill-intentioned actions, you will more so cultivate these qualities in yourself. And that's maybe this karma thing, that it's not just it's also affecting yourself. And then you can raise this question about violence. What does this, I have this in the description, what happens to us if we cultivate violence? And we can still discuss, or maybe this will, maybe we won't have time to discuss that, whether violence is still a legitimate means of action. But we should just be, I think, aware that if we do violence to other people, we have to somehow dehumanize these people. And if we do that to large groups of people, or to even to a single individual, this has consequences on us. I'm not saying that it's not legitimate in some cases, but this notion of karma has helped me to see that, well, it's not just about the other people, because it's always, you shouldn't harm other people, but what is this also doing to yourself if you do harm, and if you normalize doing harm to other people? This would be first to ego and death. Maybe we can, we could open up the discussion for 10, 15 minutes if you would like to discuss that. And I would prefer it not to be a discussion between you and me, but between all of you. But if you have questions about what I said, maybe can anybody do a list of speakers, or I can try, but
Yes.
Can
high enough so we can see it.
So you are first, second, third. Yes.
And maybe something, just a suggestion about this, because yesterday we have we did this, and we learned that it seems better if you mention whether it's on the same topic or not, so that we can actually have some follow-up questions or follow-up responses, so that we don't have parallel subjects.
How would you show that?
Good question. Yeah, I don't know, maybe we can check in just after each contribution, who needs to comment on that. I just wanted to, I'm super happy actually that there is a talk on spirituality, and I was really surprised that there would be one, because I have the experience that in Europe, or in radical spaces in Europe, and anarchist spaces, it's really hard to talk about this actually. And I still wanted to question, I guess, the term secular, because and what it means exactly to us, because I think there are a lot of really radical spiritual traditions that are not secular, and there's a whole history of Jewish anarchism and of radical Judaism, and for example, and like Sufism in many ways has like ways that can be connected to anarchism and interconnectedness and etc. But those traditions have
a non-secular spirituality, and they have like beliefs in God. And I was at the anarchist Ukraine, Ljubljana, and there was this massive banner, religion is stupid. And I didn't feel good in that space with that banner, because actually I think hierarchies in institutionalized religion and like are really oppressive, really conservative, and those things are what I fight against. But spirituality, as in believing in some God, I don't know what I think about personally, but I definitely want it to be. I would definitely want to be in spaces where it is possible to talk about that and to say many gods, no masters. I notice a lot of my friends just silencing themselves and not being able to be themselves in spaces because it is not acceptable, because there is some kind of like implicit norm or consensus that none of us believe in God. But I don't think that's true, and I also think that's part of like decolonial practice to realize that actually Western secularism has been a way to impose, that has been something that has been imposed and like forced on a lot of people, and that it is a decolonial practice to try to question that again in Europe. That's what I want to say.
I suggest I don't react, that I let you talk. Maybe so direct reaction on the same topic. Yes.
Okay, I connect to what I already say. I connect to what I already wanted to say with that, is that one other aspect is not very like, I really dislike the term of spirituality, because it's always giving in a world that's so materialist and physicalist. And I think we can have a connection between what we call spirituality and metaphysics when we give up like this completely absurd materialist, physicalist worldview, which is actually not really any, it's not real metaphysics, because it can't work it, because you're using the model instead of putting the model, using the model, the map, instead of looking on reality, like what we, not our experiences. So when we give up the materialist idea that our consciousness is created by our brains, and for example, believe that everything is in consciousness, not my personal, but in consciousness in general, then we don't have this dichotomy between like spirituality and the rest of the world, but then we have an interconnection of a whole world where we are opening for every possibility that's not inside this dichotomy. And I would agree that organized religion in a way that God is an authority is very oppressive, but it's also the same idea that most of modern science has, because they replaced God with like this unknown mechanistic rules of the universe, and it's just done by we call it in English by by chance, instead of reconnecting with the universe and seeing everybody as a part of the universe. And it's not a true worldview. We should attack this materialist and physicalist domination of anarchist spaces and of our world society.
Another direct reaction here. So I really like this approach of reconnecting, like, okay, going against institutionalized religion, I think is a very good thing. But just saying, okay, secular spirituality is the only way an anarchist should be behaving, is not too great. And I just wanted to throw in here, because we're in the middle of Europe, and most people here were raised Christian. I know I was. And even, like you mentioned, Jewish traditions and many other traditions, I don't know too much about them, but even in the Christian tradition, you look at what Jesus actually said and what he did, like throwing out the
the people
the
from the
temple.
Yes, yes, that's some righteous anger right there.
Yes.
Yeah, and maybe if you can talk, I think people that came here aren't too mad about religion or spirituality and don't want it to be purely secular. But if you talk to your comrades, maybe, you know, maybe you can talk to them a little bit and you know, read up on Christian anarchism, for example, if you're Christian or Jewish or Muslim or Hindu or whatever, and just, you know, educate yourself and come to talk to your comrades. And I think that's one way how you can, you know, get a little bit less anti-spirituality in our movement. So, how many more?
I'm not sure if that is really working because it's people who also raise their hands, so now we are really moving differently, so maybe also it's good to follow like the way that
Yeah, I would maybe we stick to that. So, who's maybe do the first, second?
One sentence.
Who's first?
I wanted to actually say something about the last part of what you said before when you came about violence and what it makes with us. And I experienced like many years ago a story in Catalonia in the countryside at a friend's family's place where the kids found an old weapon in the cellar that had been stored there by the grandfather. And they were playing around with it. Like, it was loaded with very old thing, like very, very old thing. And eventually he came and he saw that, and he asked them to bring it to them. And then he took it, and he looked at it, and he had it like a few minutes, actually. And then he looked at them and was just like, you know, with the weapon just a devil plays, and just passed it on to them and gave it back. So the kids were just like, knowing his history of having been fighting, and they didn't take it to play anymore. They started to sit down and philosophize about what he is. And it was really interesting to see also when later he came and he talked about his experiences of killing, of fighting, of resistance, of being really sure he would do it again, and really wishing he would have never been in the position to have to do it at the same time. And yeah, maybe I don't want to put more into it, but this story for me was such a, I don't know, like it opened my eyes towards certain subjects that I didn't actually pay attention before. Yeah.
Thank you. Second?
Sorry for no English here. I had many things in mind because there came many things together from those three persons. But I also think spirituality can be an anarchist thing, but I think also we have to maybe ask why the past generation of anarchists so fighting against churches, against the religion from the top and so on, and why the religion mostly changes into something that supports the ongoing hierarchies and kinds of domination and so on. And I think that having one god is something like monopolizing, or also a few gods is something like monopolizing spirituality, holiness, spirit. And I think normally it should be like equally everywhere. Like I think animism has much more in common with anarchism than, for example, science, because I think science is much more like secular monotheism. Like we are like God and we can see everything, so we have to become God. We have to see everything, know everything, create everything, so we become the master of the universe, the master of nature, and so on. And I think this is a kind of a bad Christian tradition of oppressing nature and everything that is connected with nature. But I think on the other side, spirit should be everywhere. Like spirit I think this is an anarchist way of spirituality, but I think so. I wouldn't say every religion can have a god and think that God has created the world and we are all only products, nature is just a product and so on. I think there are things who fit together with anarchism, some kinds of religion, and many kinds of religion, especially in the past, in power, like many kinds of Christianity and so on. Maybe I think it's important to remember why we fought, or past generation of anarchists fought against them, because I think it was no coincidence that they created killings on people. And I think you can change many things. For example, Gustav Landauer or Spinoza, they changed monotheist religion into pantheist religion, where you have the spirit everywhere, where God and nature is the same, and we all nature, we all God. So, as you mentioned in the other discussion, so I think this is possible, but I think having one God on top is reactionary. It's not compared. It doesn't fit with anarchism, unfortunately.
Thank you. So, two more. Do I see it? Yes.
I would even go a bit further than you said. I think genuine human condition is as libertarian as spiritual. And I think it's about experience to prove it. If we live it, we get it. I'm quite sure about that.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just speak slowly. First of all, what I want to say is the love for enemies, which I think is a practice which we should think about, also what you said about the violence part. And I think having a spiritual practice as an individual, but also within the groups in which we are active, can help in that. And also to be in this love which we need, also to have a love for people we still despise for being capitalists and exploiters and so on. Because they are still humans, they are still people. And I think it makes it more stable when we want to have a change, be it revolutionary or transformative. If we make clear, we are not going to kill you, we are not going to imprison you or whatever bestrafen punish you, but you are still a human being and you have the same right to live like everyone else. But don't stop exploiting, stop doing that. And that's basically also in many religions, I think. And the other part is, what was the criticism about Christianity here? Please differentiate between Christianity and what the ruling hierarchical people made of, because that's already misuse. That is misuse of the gospel or of the message which is intended if you read those texts. And there were already Christian movements in the Middle Ages and earlier, which could be understood as anarchists, although the word didn't exist then, back then. But they were prosecuted as heretics.
Thank you, Father. Was one.
Of like being forgiving to oppressors, you also take the perspective from the oppressors, or somehow the perspective of the oppressed and like their rage, and maybe also the possibility to live together and to forgive an oppressed person is something that for me is much more like it's much higher priority than being forgiving to some assholes and to oppressing people. Yeah.
writing now. I would, because next topic or next issue is law. So if there is a law, should be law, should be, maybe we can discuss that in this second. If that's really important. And we start again with the same exercise. If you want to compare with the person on the other side, if you want to get to know somebody else. And there's again, we have two questions. About law. So what does law mean to you? First question. And what role should it play in our lives, or in social struggles? So the same exercise, 2 minutes on your own, and then pairing and sharing. So first question again, what does law mean to you? And the second question, what role should law play in our lives and in social struggles? 2 minutes.
Yeah, starting quite controversial, but for me, I think love also means able to be hating. So that I want to love more means to care for something. Love also means to care for something, I think. But and it's also connects to hate something, you know, like it's like dependent. When I care for something, I want to stop it from suppressing. You know, that's the connection.
Sharing with one other person, 2 minutes per person for both questions. Start again whispering the topic. Thank you.
start again.
What does love mean to you? To help them and also to help yourself to be better somehow. And I think I wanted to connect it to the discussion before, is that I think to talk well about it, we have to talk about the philosopher or Jesus, because he put a lot of stuff about it. And I think we have a very problem with this philosopher, because some people say it's God and some it's everything, I think. And we have to remember that this guy came from Palestine, and he's not a white guy on the cross. He's a guy fighting against an empire. And it's important in this time to remember that. And I think, I will try to not to be too long with that, but I really thank you to organize this kind of discussion here, but at the same time I don't want to feel Buddhist, and I think it's a very interesting point of view and I respect and so on, but in Western society I think we have to think about what means spirituality in our society also, and we have a lot of people worked on hypnosis, on magnetism, on spiritism, there is a long tradition in Western countries thinking about it,
And I think we have to take this this work.
The place you take. You are the place you occupy, please.
Yeah. Okay. And I just finished with that. Is it? I think with the anarchist movement, we get rid of religion, but we get rid of spiritualism. So we have to now to make the part between both and to think about this history we have to take back.
Thank you. So, who's one person? Anybody second?
So, yeah, we were talking about love not being a, like a passive position, it can be a very active position. And the idea like a, with a baby, that a baby is gonna eat something that is harmed the body, so you are gonna force the baby with your physical force maybe to stop that because it's gonna harm the body of the baby, but also maybe it's gonna harm someone else. So it's, you do it from love because you care about the baby and you care about the rest of the people, but you can use force and stop the baby from doing that. So it's about caring, about being responsible, about everyone else and what surrounds us, but you can use physical force and be strong about it.
Thank you. So, second.
Yeah, I think love is about empathy a lot, so going into connection with each other, and I think this is also helpful if like we are thinking about creating our utopian or our spaces where we feel safe. And yeah, we can also think about like values like, hey, we want to be anti-sexist or something like this, but it can also be like very helpful to think about this in a way of like, what do people, all the people need in this place, and what do you need to be feel safe, and be like more on this level of what does everybody need, and if you're in like a lovely empathy relationship with each other, you can like maybe easily create or more easily create spaces.
Yeah. So this is already connecting to the second question, what role should love play in our lives and social struggles? So, any other people who haven't talked?
Okay, so for me, love should be the inner trust in other people that we do the right thing and that we can follow each other, and like a way of going to each other and not like mistrusting each other, but trusting that we all do the right thing and fight for the right thing. And I think love should be also like criticizing each other because we're not doing that enough, and I think that should be like more positively connotated, because we can only learn if someone says or someone tells us that we like do something wrong or we should do something better. And I think it's like a way of like positioning each other in the world, and yeah, not seeing it like single-sided but like multi-sided. And love should be, I don't know, a general feeling, and not like only romantically, but also like a general, yeah, I don't know the English word, so a general feeling of, I don't know, fighting together, maybe?
For me, I also thought like love is also kind of a starting ground why I even engage in a struggle, because I feel like love for the people or things around me and for myself, and this is kind of the position I come into a struggle.
So we will take a few more.
No, or I just talk like this. Yeah, for me, love for me is not a starting point, and more like a place we want to meet. because love is also an active act, and it need, it's not just like every old time present, and it needs to, it's building on respect, and for this, for me it's hard to act out of love, but towards love. This is also like something I think about a lot when people are talking about love, that it's just like there and we need to see it, but for me it's like more also work on it and be respectful of each other and aware.
Thank you. So I see three more people, is that right? One, two, three, four. More? Five? No. Four. We will. Five more people and then, yes.
Love is like an idea and also a feeling, like a very realistic feeling, but also an idea. And I can approach this feeling maybe like if in a very spiritual moment to the big spectrum of everything around me. But like in my everyday life, it will focus on a certain, on a closer surrounding. So I will not feel the same kind of love to every individual, but I can approach every individual with the idea of this love that this person should receive. And I think this is like also this thing, like making it easier for us to not get overwhelmed. And also not be just accepting of everything that is around us.
Thank you. Want to go next?
Yes. I will try to be comprehensive, but I'm not sure. I think when we talk about love, we consider it always in very intimate context. That's something we live intimately, and we don't discuss about it in more societal level. And with the person when we discuss about love, I said that I don't know what is love, but I was thinking that can I find way to understand what is love when I sort of use the opposite logic when I see that when people are not loved, when they feel that they're not loved, it creates violence against them. And I try to recognize, okay, so what does that mean? And I guess mostly people feel neglected when they don't feel loved. And that is a violence to the person to feel this experience. And I was thinking if I could switch this to more broad level, actually. Me personally, I can relate a lot to love in the intimate context and more general level in the society, as I relate a lot to lack of love, to also all sort of, I mean, also systematic discrimination. I think that creates sort of similar experience to the persons, that they don't feel loved, and me, as I am facing a systematic discrimination, which is quite new in my life, which I didn't experience before, it's new, so it puts me in all different situations where I kind of have a impression that the society doesn't love me, and what does that mean? I have the impression that the society does not consider that my life is worth the same as others. And it made me think a lot about that, what we can do with love if it's always remains something very intimate, actually. And maybe if we cannot love everyone, is it possible to actually to share love at least by not neglecting others, by not creating the experience of being neglected, of that their life means less?
Thank you. Yes.
Love is not just a common thing, it's really a thing that I feel connected to what is around me, so to nature, to the world, and to also what I can see in a way. And I do feel it's important to, an important drive also now with this facing of climate catastrophe, that in sensing what is around me, in sensing also the trees suffering from not having water, like
but not melting melting with what is, so suffering. So also there is the need of sensing myself being self, and not, and this is the, for me, a difference to the ego thing, that first I need to have the sense of self to also feel connected, and then I can sense this, what Thich Nhat Hanh is calling the interbeing, in a way, like that we all have something in common, and then it's not something about just intimate relationships, in a way. And what I also wanted to say, like in Europe we have all the witch hunts, so what the witch hunts made with, like, spirituality and what the religion did with that, and in a way, yeah, thinking about what was before.
Thank you. So two more.
I'll try to be short, just connecting it back to anarchism in general. To me, for, the feeling of love is, you can say it's the basis, or it's the act of performing mutual aid. So I guess a lot of you know Kropotkin and mutual aid stuff and everything, and yeah, that's basically, yeah, mutual aid, he claimed that it's an inert feeling to help each other. In one species, but also going through to other species or life forms and everything. And yeah, that's it basically. Mutual aid, and that also connects to the society thing, at least if you're an anarcho-communist. Thanks. Okay. Two very last
names. Is there room for another one?
Or we will. We should have time at the end to pour in another, and you can be first.
I'm going to keep it short. Just wanted to address like a small point that was made earlier, like love justifying physical oppression in a way, and then like drawing from an analogy of a baby to like that we would care for and setting physical boundaries. And I just wanted, because I didn't want to let it stand like this and say that it's, you cannot infer from love for a baby to all kinds of love, and that I wouldn't want to use love in any way to justify oppression of people and to prevent things, to prevent them doing things against their own will. I want to side much more with this idea of love as sympathy and like, and for the other person and their struggles, and then helping them instead of like preventing them to do bad things to themselves. Like, yeah, just one.
Thank you. Is it okay if we leave your intervention also for the end, or is it something short?
It's not so short, so let's do that.
So then, again, like last time, maybe I will say a few words about what I thought about this, and I just want to come back to some discomfort that I feel in the room about this secularity and this perspective, and I respect that, and I see that the other forms of spirituality are totally valid too. It's just that that's the only one I'm a bit familiar with and can talk about it, and it's also the one connecting, or at least so far connecting most with me. So it's not saying that other forms of spirituality are not valid, and I think they can be even complementary. Yes, but maybe we can talk about this at the end too. Love was for me also maybe of these topics the most difficult one, because I also started to read like just recently the book Hatred of Sheidan Kurt, and so it's like what role should anger, hatred, and these other feelings that are seen as in opposition to love play in our lives and our social struggles, and who is allowed to hate and who shouldn't or who isn't. Yes, but I will now focus still on love, because this would be a topic too broad to address. And for love, the book I really like is the book of Bell Hooks, The All About Love, which is there too. And I see many raising hands. And so she gives a definition, I will read it, which she takes from a psychiatrist called Scott Peck. For her, love is, I quote, the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. So she goes on and says, love is as love does. Love is an act of will, namely both an intention and an action. Will also implies a choice. We do not have to love, we choose to love. And then she gives a list of ingredients, what in her view is love, or together composed of love, and this is care, affection, recognition, respect, commitment, trust, as well as honest and open communication. This, I find that I like this definition, and it's quite challenging also if you want to love that way. I think what I like about it is that it extends this thing about love, like, you know, it's also going away from this self-centeredness. It's not just about your own feeling, it's also about maybe the spiritual growth of the other person. What I also really like about it, and it has been said before in the discussion, that it's not something that is just out there, it doesn't just happen. Maybe affection can happen just like that, and you see somebody, ooh, wow, what a great person. But love means a lot more than that. And so it's a doing, it's an act of choice, of will, and something you have to consciously practice over and over again. It doesn't just stay like that. And it has been said also that this also then makes it possible to see when violence is used, and whether violence is possible together with love, because maybe violence, domestic violence, is possible when you have affection for the person, but when you really include all these ingredients of love in your love, you can't be hitting your partner, and probably you can't be hitting your child, I would say. Okay, there's some direct intervention to...
I will
try to be fast,
yeah.
And then we leave more room. So yeah, then
you went real quick through the components of love by Bell Hooks, and
I can repeat that.
Real quick, sorry about the
intention. So the components are care, affection, recognition, respect, commitment, trust, as well as honest and open communication. It's on page 5. Yes, so I think when you engage with this sense of love, you have to always reconsider, reflect whether your actions are really driven by love, by all these ingredients, or whether some of them are actually absent, because love is not possible, doesn't go along with neglect. It is not possible to love and to abuse. So I think it's a very challenging and interesting definition, and also the transformational power lies in there, in this, because she speaks of love. Through love, you can practice a passion for connection between individuals, a passion of connection that can replace or counter the passion to possess, which is based on domination and oppression. So I think really with this definition, and with practicing love, you can extend this this passion for connection over the passion of possession. The last thing, meditation part, I will just go through very quickly because it's there in the program. So I realized that in my practice, I benefited a lot from two forms of meditation. There's one collecting meditation around the four virtues, they call it in Buddhism, which is loving kindness, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity. And so you, in this practice, you take one of these issues, for example, compassion, you take a sentence, and there's one standard sentence there, may you be free from suffering and pain, and then you repeat the sentence over and over again through meditation retreat, for example, and you have different categories of people who you apply this to. You have the four virtues of qualities of heart. It's loving kindness, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity. Equanimity in German is Gleichmut, Gelassenheit. I think in French it's Serenité. So the practice of this meditation is that you have these sentences, may you be free from suffering and pain, if you practice compassion. You apply it first to some friend where it's easy to connect, to say, may you be free from suffering and pain. And you repeat this sentence, you visualize the person, and you repeat it over and over. You do that in a short retreat, maybe in half a day, then go over to the next category, which may be a neutral person. Somebody you don't know, you happen to see that person, maybe in the retreat. Then you go on to yourself, you practice it with yourself, and then you continuously go on to a more difficult person, and you try to feel that compassion for other more difficult people too, which doesn't mean that you say what they are doing is right, but you try to build that human connection. So it's just personal experience, but I did that once, a 1 week retreat with compassion, and it was really hard because you connect to all the suffering out there in the world, and then at the end you apply this sentence to all the beings in that world, and it was a really powerful and really profound experience. And I think it may be in German it's durchlässig, like more permeable to the suffering out there, and to see it and to recognize it, and then to, and I think then the natural reaction would be to act. When you open yourself up to the suffering out there, it becomes more natural to intervene and to make it stop. So that's one form of meditation. The other form of meditation is mindfulness, insight meditation, where you are not trying to collect your mind on a specific topic, but you try to practice and see, feel your bodily sensations, your thoughts, your emotions, and how they emerge, how they fade away, but also whether these thoughts provoke pleasantness, unpleasantness, or neutral state in yourself, and then also the reaction to this unpleasantness. Often, if it's an unpleasant thought, you react to it with aversion, and then this automatically, if you're not very aware, also affects your reaction towards other people. And so I think an example would be also in our political groups, there's a criticism or somebody's blamed for being racist or sexist. If I'm in that position of being blamed for being a sexist, my reaction is immediately probably no, like I'm not, and trying to, whether I blame the other person or I said it's a misunderstanding or I over-apologize and try to free myself from blame. And actually, maybe if we practice, or I practice this on a more regular basis, I can see, oh, there's this feeling, unpleasantness, oh, I'm being criticized. And I could just stay with that unpleasantness for a while instead of trying to react immediately. And this, there, I think it's opening up the possibilities for choice also in our activities, in our interrelations. And what I think is the most powerful about it is that it allows us to deconstruct our systems of oppression within ourselves. If we see these patterns that we have been socialized to, that we have learned, that maybe in some, to some extent are maybe natural, we become able to deconstruct these systems of oppression within ourselves. And that's also why I think that these are this spirituality with this practice, and I think practice is important because it's not cognitive thing then anymore. It becomes a bodily practice too. You have this outer activism and outer struggles in the outside world, and you have the inner struggles inner activism where you try to deconstruct these patterns of domination, and that these two, in my view, are the two sides of the same coin in one social transformation. So, and now I will leave the floor to you. So maybe raise their line up, the people who wanted to speak. So maybe you can define your order on your own. Who's one? One? Who's two? Are you two? Three? Who's three? Three, four, five. Okay, here we go. And then we have one.
So it's very funny because I really want to talk about that book. I wanted to be kind of book to discuss about. So yeah, I think the opportunity to say something else. Thank you so much for organizing this. I think it's like we need it a lot in our amateur circles. I also feel like it's a very wide topic and everybody has a lot to say, and there's like a lot of enthusiasm in the room about it. So maybe I want to see if you would benefit from having like another space to talk about it, or maybe you want to make a word circle or something like this to keep talking about this in the following week. I don't know, maybe we could organize that. And I just leave it there. And also, like, another technical point, I feel like there was some sort of controversy about who's going to talk first, if we need to, prioritize people who have direct answers, or if we have to respect, like, the turns who raise their hand first. And I was thinking maybe we would benefit from having, at the beginning of our workshops, different workshops, like some sort of point about the different facilitation signs, like this, or this one, and maybe it would make communication easier.
So, I
was saying maybe this kind of thing is like direct answer. This is like we agree, this is disagreeing, and I was just making the point for the next workshops. Not this one particularly, but like each one of us is going to do other workshops, and maybe that would make communication easier in general in the festival.
Taking initiative to set
the
agenda.
I wanted to respond to the question of the last round of what is love and how should it exist in our movement.
How's it louder?
For me, I feel like love is very much like an embodied state of mind that doesn't exist in a vacuum. I think that saying these ingredients are like what you need for love to be something that you can feel is very, very important. And I think considering that a lot of us are like in fights
that is putting ourselves in situations where we're routinely exposed to situations where our nervous system and our bodies are not in that loving space where you feel less boundaries around the self, you feel more connected, you seem to interbeing. And I think for me it's very much like a life question about like how do you go from these spaces where our nervous systems are likely in like fight or flight mode a lot of the time, and love and the actions that come from love, the care that like, creates more love in the world, is not something that's free flowing within us. Like, how do you come to a space like this where there's a sense of safety, but there's also, I think, a sense of like connecting over the rage and the fight? You know, there's a lot of like soldier fighting archetypes within anarchism. And yeah, I wonder like what practices we can use, because there's like many, many instances of historical practices that are ongoing, like dancing, poetry to like recognize each other's place in the culture, and like a kind of sense of like the battle is over, you can like switch off that mode and like shake it out. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting question, like how do we actually create these like embodied spaces of love when we want to create a safe space, but everyone's nervous systems are just like jacked up high, you know, like it's not just a question of like, oh, I want to do this, it's like, but how? That's a question.
Could be in the workshop.
Yeah.
Who was, thank you, who was third?
So maybe it would be, I think it would be. So we're getting to the end. What I'm going to say is kind of built on what we saw, and so if you guys want to talk about it later on during the festival or whatever, I'm fine with it. It's just, so we were talking about the older forms of anarchy that were really against religion and spirituality, and also I've been thinking that our whole movement is based on ideology, but also on the idea of greater good, and that's something that is quite connected to religions. I'm more familiar with Christianity, but we're in anarchismus, we're trying to build the greater good right now, not the greater good in paradise after death. It's kind of like we want to build our own ideology, our own utopia here, and that's why we are here. And it's also based on love for our fellow human beings, love for animals, and love for the planet. So for me, it is not just a political ideology, it's also something that comes from within, and that is built also. And for me, that kind of differentiates us from other political movements. Although we do have a lot of different dogmas and different generations, I guess, and it's just this whole thing that I think we're linking spirituality and political action by being anarchists in a way. And that's why I kind of want to always keep the conversation open to all of other types of spiritualities, mainly religions that have had a really bad name in the past years and generations for us. That's the way I envision. So if you guys want to discuss that later on at other points, I'd be happy to have that conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really, really appreciating this conversation, and yeah, it's really great for everyone. Okay. I wanted to go back on the idea of the link between love and violence and the ways we talk about violence, because I think like one of the ingredients of bell hooks was honest and caring communication, and I think it's wonderful, but I think there are people like cops or active perpetrators of porn with whom we can't have that communication, really. So I feel the need to have a conversation around how do we use violence in as like a last resort to stop someone from committing active harm. And so yeah, of course, someone sometimes can be, actually I agree, like a force sometimes can be a tool of love to stop harm, but then there is like a whole like abolitionist framework that we can use also to say,
we want you to be free of the suffering of the harm that you are causing, and we want you, and we are believing your ability to change and to grow. And I think that's something to look into also, like that work of Black women in queer in the US that have worked on the African prison abolition and transformative justice, because I think that is a work of love. And yeah, so that's just what I'm going to say. Oh yeah, and just a little thing, I think sometimes I witness around me some form of like romance or an anarchist community of like romanticization of violence. And I guess I really want to remind ourselves that it is not an end, it is a means to an end, and it is a last resort. And so sometimes I do feel a bit weird about the way you talk about violence sometimes.
Thank you. We won't introduce the science now, I think. But just who would like to speak? Because it's almost one.
I have a proposition for a meeting.
Yeah, so there's a proposition for a meeting up this afternoon. Who would really want to say something now to the entire group?
I want to invite to a practice which takes about 30 seconds. At the end.
At the end.
Okay, you want to respond to.
Maybe just short also to what you said before about violence, and you said it like we can try to teach people to change, and I think there is people who cannot be taught to change, as you said, and you said like we can be forgiving, but we cannot forgive something that wasn't done to ourselves. I cannot forgive for something that was happened to somebody else. It's not my place. But I can step in and say, I will support this not to happen again. So, and this is where I feel that, like, non-violence is not always the method that we need.
Thank you. So, very last, then the exercise.
I try also to respond to that. So like with the violence we have, I mean, we maybe need to approach it. How about empathy? So like love with empathy, and we know also like, okay, police people have also fears, and then we empathize with that, but also we try to get our struggle in the room.
To what you said about the dynamics in leftist groups sometimes, because I think many leftist people are people that have heavy trigger points inside of them, because they have undergone a lot of discrimination and were not able to adapt to the society in a way to not feel the discrimination anymore or like this. I think there's a lot of trauma going on also in many people, and what I see is that many people are triggered very fast, and they get into a heavy state of aversion. And I think this, what you say, except this, for example, this personal practice or things like this, or spiritual practice can be, especially for leftist people, very important to learn how to not stay in the state of aversion in times where the whole society is more and more disconnecting in a way, and the aversion is getting higher on both sides. Like on the right side of the society, there's a high state of aversion, and the parts of the left side, there's a very high state of aversion. I'm interested in finding answers or practices on how this aversion, what you feel against discrimination, against all these things that affect you hard and state of aversion that is totally right in the first place. I feel that I don't want this, this is wrong, I'm against it, I'm going into fight mode. But to find, like a transformative practice that does not make you stay trapped in this, in this pure state of aversion.
Thank you. So there was this suggestion to continue this afternoon. Do you have this?
Really quickly, and emphasizing this, but I know many of us are going to be leaving because we have other workshops, so we want to eat and drink beer. I personally have nothing lined up this afternoon until the evening, until the choir rehearsal of magic. So I'll probably be at 2:30 at the Ice Arena, probably near the table or something, if y'all want to come hang out and continue this informal discussion group, because I think we have a lot to say to each other. And we have had enough of us old friends who make fun of us for being spiritual. So if y'all want to come and hang, I'd probably be there.
And I would also...
That was very fast. It's like the English part, that was very fast. That was first to everybody who made it.
At 2:30, yes.
At 2:30 at the Ice Arena.
I don't know the people who are organizing the workshop, but I know that this evening at 6 o'clock there's also a workshop about transformative justice. We have been talking about how to deal with aversion and suppression and like many other ways, and I think this is a way for dealing with it. So I would like to invite you to go there if you're interested. And I would like to thank you. We will do the exercise. What is there someone?
Okay. Okay. I just it's a little self-promoted, but when I got into activism a few years ago, I just left the period of being like very much in like meditation and yoga mode, and then I got into activism and I was like, oh my god, you're all taking care of yourselves and all this burnout culture. And then I also just started my master's, so I decided to write a thesis on it, and I finished it a few months ago. And it goes into meditation, it goes into Christianity, it goes into dancing, it goes into bell hooks, it goes into it goes into deconditioning, and right now it's a big chunk of text, but I'm also planning on turning it into a zine. I don't know if people are interested in reading it. I'm very happy to share. So if you want, you can find me in your email address or whatever you like, and I'll send it to you.
Thanks. So thank you for coming and for these very interesting, lively discussions we had. And we will finish with the exercise.
Yeah, thank you. It is about a really tiny meditation technique for groups, which I want you to invite to try out here. Just be comfortable, just stay sitting or go outside. It is like you stand up, stay on your base feet. If you feel good, grab the hand to the person who's left and right to you. And then just take deep breaths, like breaths or something like that. And if everyone is finished, just take a tiny squeeze. And then you can let off the temperature down in the room. But I can suggest it for starting.
Thank you.
Perhaps, and I suggest it's important to mention in your case.
Well,
not in meditation.
Thank you.